If you went on a road trip and you didn't stop for a Big Mac or drop a crispy fry between the car seats or use your McDonald's bag as a placemat, then that wasn't a road trip. It was just a really long drive. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Roto World Baseball Show. I'm your host, Eric Samulski, joined as always by my co-host, Scott Pianowski. Scott, we've got more injury news to start the show off with. It feels like it's always like this in baseball. It feels a little more so this year. And this first one stings us in our fandom as well, too.
Yeah, this fantasy baseball season is starting to feel like a fantasy football season where it's just carnage. You're filling up those IL spots and all you can keep doing is make good decisions, right? And you hope that the compounding of good decisions will put you in a good place in the second half of the season. But I understand that it's a grind a lot of times when you have, especially your players who are playing well, you get hurt. Nothing more frustrating than that, but hopefully the next hour can give you some solutions.
Yes, that's the goal. That's the plan. You know, we talked about this a little bit before we started. You're not going to fix everything, right? And I think that we need to get out of our heads that, like, we can make ourselves whole all the time when we get these injuries. It's just, how can I make the best decision for my team in that particular context? I still am a believer. Tell me if you agree before we get into this news. I'm still a believer in, like, we're early enough in the season where if I have a player going down, I'm trying to just add the most talented player who fills that spot in my lineup. I'm not yet saying, hey, I really need runs, or hey, I really need stolen bases. Now that shifts if the guy who's hurt is like your main source of stolen bases, right? But generally speaking, if you are losing a hitter, if you're losing a starting pitcher, I'm looking just at replacing that player with the most talented player I can get and not so much trying to hit a category need where we're at right now.
Mostly agree with you. I know Ron Chandler said many years ago that he would draft for value and think about balancing during the season. And I still think that ethos, which is pretty much what you just said about, I'm just trying to make my team better and I'll worry about balancing it later. There were a couple of leagues where I don't have a lot of stolen bases, and Luis Garcia is playing pretty well for the Nationals. He's just 9% rostered in Yahoo, and he's been running lately. I think he had 4 stolen bases in his last 3 games. He's also batting cleanup. I know the Washington lineup isn't the most exciting lineup in the world, but he was somebody maybe with saves and steals, it's a little bit different, where if somebody's running or getting saves,
yes,
we're willing to overlook a lot of things they don't do because that's a low bar for relevance.
But yeah, and we're definitely going to talk about
for sure. But I want to just underscore what you said, that you just try. It's kind of like in baseball, right? What everybody does early on is you try to play for a big inning and score a bunch of runs, and then and bunting like in the first inning and the second inning of a baseball game is like almost always just stupid. But yeah, then late in the game when you need one run to win, bunting can be the right thing because the 5-run inning doesn't matter anymore. You're just trying to win the game. So what I want you to do right now is play for the beginning, make your team as good as you can, and when the season gets deeper and the categories have personality and shape to them, then we'll figure out, okay, these are the trades that make sense, or these are the categories that you can trade from, and mm-hmm, these are the categories you need to fix. Maybe these are the categories you need to punt. None of that stuff's in play right now. Right now, you're just trying to build the best monster you can build.
Agreed. And so we'll jump right in. The injury that Scott and I are referencing for our fandom, our Red Sox fandom, is Tristan Casas, who took a swing on Saturday, grabbed his oblique, and everybody thought it was an oblique injury, but then the Red Sox referred to it as a left rib strain. We don't have any word. He's getting an MRI today, Monday. The Red Sox don't play until Tuesday. So they're probably not going to make any extra moves until they have to on Tuesday. We should hear on Monday the extent of the injury. Obviously, when we do, you'll know a little bit more about how you want to approach this. All indications from the Red Sox are that it is something relatively serious. Alex Cora said he's not optimistic. They mentioned that, you know, Casas is in a good deal of pain. Casas himself mentioned that he's in a good deal of pain. I think this is multiple weeks. Obliques can also linger. So you could be looking at, 6 weeks, maybe longer. I think all we can tell people right now is that you're putting Casas on your IL. You're not cutting him, and you're keeping your fingers crossed for, something not terrible when the MRI comes out.
Why can't the Red Sox have nice things? Tyler O'Neill is off to a monster start. He's hurt right now, not as serious as Casas, but he's hurt. Casas is hurt. They've had a lot of pitching injuries, of course, which is endemic in baseball right now. Trevor Story, who we thought was going to fix the defense. He wasn't hitting yet, but now, his season is basically over. You talked about Cora and Casas, what they were saying about the injury, and this underscores a rule of mine. It's kind of just a common sense BS detector rule that when teams tell us sunshiny good things, I think you have to be very careful about what's real and what isn't. But when teams tell us bad news, that's almost always 100% accurate. So when everybody say, I'm worried about this injury, I'm concerned and all that stuff, that should perk your ears up. And I think this is going to be an extended loss for the Red Sox. And it's a shame. I really like this team and they're off to a 13-10 start, but I feel like right now the team is held together by scotch tape and barbed wire. And they don't have the depth. Yeah. I think their starting team was pretty good. The opening 25 they came out with, but they don't have the depth to have these kind of injuries. And I'm just afraid when that's going to, Cutter Crawford can't pitch every day. And even when Cutter Crawford pitches, it's 5 or 6 innings and he's out of the game, probably not getting a win. I still think I'll give you one other guy I want you to add in this team. I know it doesn't help you if you lost Casas, but relievers are so valuable in fantasy these days, even if they're not closing. And they have this kid, Justin Slayton. Yeah. I have a feeling he's going to be closing in the second half of the year. The Red Sox are not. Did you write that in the Roto World?
I wrote that exact thing in the blurb last night because that was my game. And I just said, look, the rumors of Kenley Jansen being traded were all preseason, right? Kenley Jansen and Chris Martin are both in the last year of their contracts. If the Red Sox are not contending in the second half of the year, and I think we assumed even fully healthy, they were probably a fringe playoff team, but unlikely playoff team. Now not healthy after losing Giolito, Story, Casas for a while, Pivetta, we don't know for how long, Whitlock, we don't know for how long. Like, I think this is a team that's going to be selling in the second half of the year. I would assume that Jansen and Martin are guys that they sell for prospects. And then Slayton is the best arm in their bullpen right now. He was a Rule 5 pick that the Mets picked him in the Rule 5 draft, and then the Mets traded him that same day to the Red Sox. And so it's really worked out well for the Red Sox. And so Slayton is somebody I love just for ratios and as a second half stave stash for sure.
One of my favorite, I'm not going to steer this podcast off the road, make us talk about Reed Garrett for 50 minutes, but I love
but
I want to, and he just had a great week. He had a couple of wins, a save, 10 strikeouts. I love these ratio smoothing relievers who maybe they get the leverage work. Maybe they don't. What does leverage work mean? Because it's not just about the save for these relievers now, because more wins are getting factored into relief these days, the impact of getting those odd wins from your relievers is much more important than it was in the old days when, every team had a tight rotation, guys didn't get hurt as much, they went deeper in games. Even bad pitchers might win 13 to 15 games. Now, like a good pitcher might win 10 or 12, depending on how things fall. So if I can get a pitcher in the case of Garrett, in the case of the Red Sox guy, Slayton, right? If I'm just getting the good ratios and occasional shots at a win or a save, yeah, that's valuable to me. And if we see a possibility of a promotion, we were all speculating with Texas. Jose Leclerc looked bad on opening day, and we're all trying to figure out, is it Robertson? Is it Yates? Yeah, it's Yates right now. I still think Robertson's value is good. I'd want him in a medium or a deeper league. So We're not going to talk about 8,000 million relievers here, but I just want you to constantly be grinding. And it's all format dependent. There are some leagues that are not as valuable as others. I've been in some leagues in NL, for example. Gray Albright drafted a staff of all relief pitchers. Doug Dennis has done that to win AL Tout. And again, you have to play to your room. Maybe it's better in a mono league to do that. But, you know, whether it's Cases picking up Slayton, which I did this week, I've Reed Garrett's on a bunch of my teams. I just want you to, as I've totally steered us away from Costas here, maybe I'm just trying to you know, say something positive on a team that looks kind of cursed right now. But just there's a lot of value to be had in the bullpen. I want everybody to have that in mind.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. And I think the good news for the Red Sox, which we can get to, is that apparently Rafael Devers and Tyler O'Neill are both planning to be back on Tuesday. We will see how that goes. O'Neill had concussion symptoms and was placed on the concussion IL. Devers is dealing with a knee injury, but it's a bone bruise. A name to keep an eye on for the Red Sox.
By the way, for Boston, by the way, at least the Bruins and Celtics look great on the weekend.
Sure. A name to keep an eye on for the Red Sox. I think Rob Refsnyder is going to play a lot versus lefties at first base. And then Nico Cavadas is at AAA right now for Boston. He's hitting .286 with four home runs, 10 RBIs. He has a .446 on base percentage and a 1,089 OPS. He is a left-handed hitter, so there is a chance that they do, you know, they could call up Cavadas. They could have him play mainly against righties at first, and Robbie Refsnyder could play mainly against lefties at first. It's going to be a lot of mixing and matching. You know, Bobby Dalbec has the cat with nine lives, gets another. Pablo Reyes. You know, these are not guys you're really adding outside of the deepest formats. You're crossing your fingers. You're hoping Devers and O'Neill are back, and you get those bats in the lineup. And we'll get to Willie Abreu, who is somebody that will hit in the waiver wire section, who's another name to know.
Yeah, remember that Fenway is a really good park for left-handed hitters. We've seen that all, you know, Yastrzemski, Fred Lynn, there's been so many great, David Ortiz, so many great examples of that. And I feel like, I don't have any data to back this up, but I feel like platooning has made a major comeback the last few seasons. And the whole key with platoons is if somebody's on the heavy side of it, you can consider them. If they're on the short side of it, then it becomes a real specialty play. And if you're in a format that allows enough roster maintenance to get those guys in the lineup, and maybe it's more of a DFS thing or something, you fool around with props or whatever. But that's, I feel like every team now, Eric, when we're always talking about analyzing lineups and analyzing slots and all that. I feel like I have to, for one of the first questions I have to ask when I analyze any offense is who's platooning here? What does the lineup look like against lefties and righties? Because I feel like teams are getting, even though teams don't have huge benches, I mean, every team wants a million, you know, bottomless cup of pitchers in the bullpen. Yeah. I understand why, but yeah, I'm always on those pages, you know, like that Fangraphs great roster resource page, where it shows you really easy to gauge who's platooning and stuff. That's a huge part of baseball in 24.
It definitely is. It for sure is. And it's something everybody needs to keep an eye on. Another negative injury is, to Mets catcher Francisco Alvarez, who tore ligaments in his thumb. He kind of stumbled rounding first base and put his thumb down and tore ligaments. We keep hearing this like, oh, he'll be back in 6 to 8 weeks. I would not be so sure that I'm on the far side of this for a couple reasons. One, I think we'll get more once they perform the surgery. We'll get a little more information on what is going on with the ligaments, right? Two, in addition to hitting, it's his catching hand, okay? The thumb on your catching hand takes a beating all day long, especially when you're catching mid-90s fastballs. In order to properly frame a low fastball, you have to get your hand underneath the ball and try to lift it up so you're getting to the bottom of the strike zone. That means that fastball is basically hitting the thumb bed so that you can get underneath the ball. There's no way Francisco Alvarez is able to catch consistently until that thumb is 100% clear, healthy. They're not going to put their young cornerstone catcher back receiving and catching until that thumb is fully healed and ready to actually take the beating that it is going to take. I'm looking at least 8 weeks, in my opinion, because their timeline right now, the players are saying 6 to 8 weeks. Remember, this is not the doctors. This is the players saying 6 to 8 weeks. That's what they've been told. I'm going at least 8 weeks. I can't hold him in leagues without an IL spot for 8 weeks, possibly 10 weeks. And it sucks to cut a guy like Francisco Alvarez. I had to do it in an NFBC league last night because I just couldn't see holding him for that long. I personally added Patrick Bailey in that league. It was a 12-team, two-catcher league, so it's shallower. And Patrick Bailey is just somebody who is playing every day. We have talked about some other guys that you could roster under 50% rostered in Yahoo leagues. Ryan Jeffers is playing almost every day because he's DHing a lot for the Twins. The Twins did make a roster move we'll talk about in a second, which could impact that. But Ryan Jeffers, Travis d'Arnaud is still under 50% rostered. He is the catcher in Atlanta until Sean Murphy comes back. He had three homers in a game last weekend. He's hitting the ball consistently well. If you want something that could be more long-term, Keibert Ruiz with the Nationals is starting a rehab assignment this week, which means he should be back in the Nationals lineup next week and will be their everyday starter at catcher. And so he's somebody who we were drafting in most leagues as a starting catcher this year. It gets dark after this. Danny Jansen is back. He's a guy you could look at. He's just 2-for-10 in his first 10 games or first 10 at bats back with the team. Bo Naylor is not playing well, but he's playing often for Cleveland. He's a guy. If you need somebody this week, Elias Diaz for the Rockies is just 34% rostered. They get four home games against the Padres, and then they go to Mexico City, and that park last year played so hitter-friendly. So Elias Diaz is going to have a real hitter-friendy week. So maybe something like, hey, I'm going to pick up Elias Diaz for this week, and then I pick up Keibert Ruiz for the long term next week could be an interesting move. Are you in agreement that in those like no IL leagues, you just have to move on from Alvarez?
Yeah, I think you do. And you hit a key point. When they say 6 to 8 weeks, you have to hear that is 8 weeks. And this is a case where they say the optimistic stuff and you have to take it with a grain of salt. And remember, when Eric's talking about all that, the technical aspect of catching, we're talking about somebody who was a college catcher. So Eric knows from experience what it's like. I'm sure you were an excellent pitch framer. I don't know what the metrics say, but I'm sure you were still.
I was right. Actually, I was much better at that than blocking. I'll tell you that much.
How were you as a hitter?
Solid. Fine. I should have hit for more power given my frame. I didn't use my lower half properly. And I was a head case. And so
who would your MLB comp be?
The way Henry Davis is hitting right now, probably Henry Davis.
Awesome. Also, again, this is more of a shallow league play, but Mitch Garver is off to a horrible start, but still get a lot of walks. We love catchers who don't catch. That's part of the angle for Jeffers. Garver, I still think, is eventually going to percolate back over 50%, and you have to play to your format, of course. I would not hold Alvarez. It's 2 months, and then who knows how quickly he comes back, and maybe they baby him, and then maybe he's just, you know, his swing isn't ready, and it turns out you wait 2 months for him, and then you feel like you have to play him, and then he doesn't hit for a few more weeks. It's no fun for a player, an ascending talent. He had a breakout season last year, and we all know that he has the upside to be like an all-star. Like a silver slugger type of guy. I mean, he could be that good, but I cut him. The one league where I really needed him, it's like, well, I can't wait. I have other IL problems I have to deal with, which is life in 2024. So it was kind of an easy cut, not a fun cut, but kind of an easy cut to make.
Yeah, there's the easy and fun are separate distinctions there. Sometimes you got to make the moves that are hard. Before we get to pitching, there are some good news for hitters. Three hitters were activated off the IL either this weekend or today. Just let me know your relative interest in all three of them. The Twins move I mentioned was that this morning, Monday, the Twins activated Max Kepler off the IL, so he should go right back into their starting lineup. Trevor Larnach maybe still gets in the starting lineup. We'll see what it does to like Austin Martin's playing time or Jose Miranda, how they move guys around the infield and outfield. Nathaniel Lowe was activated off the IL for the Rangers over the weekend. He has started both games and hit fifth in the lineup both times for the Rangers. And then Michael Massey, the Royals second baseman, was activated off the IL over the weekend. He started both games against righties and hit seventh. And then he did, as a left-handed hitter, he did sit on Sunday against a lefty. So So Massey is somebody who maybe starts against all right-handed pitching. I have an interest in all three of these guys, depending on the league type. I'm curious if you kind of agree.
Yeah, Kepler has been such a tease for me. I see that there's certain sort of formats where he would make sense as a pickup. Lowe, to me, stands ahead of all this group of three. Career OPS plus of 119. Best lineup environment, right? Texas is a really maybe the Royals are better than I think, but I mean, Texas should be a top five offense. If they finish the year as the top scoring team in the American League, it wouldn't surprise me at all. And this is where a couple of their guys are off to slow starts. Evan Carter hasn't hit at all, but he's eventually going to. I know they didn't have Seager at the beginning of the season. I just want pieces of this offense, and Lowe's going to hit slot in the middle of it. So he's certainly, and the Gold Glove defense is also going to keep him in the lineup, even if he doesn't hit right away. But he's middle of his career too, age 28 season. Lowe's my guy. Maybe you can talk me into Massey. Kepler, I just feel like we know who Kepler is. He's a high strikeout, high fly ball guy. Those guys have huge slumps, and he's been like almost every Minnesota player. I feel like it's just been a struggle to keep him on the field. So I've been, maybe to my detriment, I've been bitten so many times by that team. Kills me that I drafted a Buxton chair this year. I'm like, why did I do this? Why did I do this? This is, you know, Charlie Brown trying to kick the football, and it always gets swiped away with Byron Buxton. I feel a little bit that way about the entire Twins offense at times.
Yeah, I agree with you on Lowe. I will say that I am also a fan of Massey. I added him in a couple places where Ozzy Albies was placed on the IL in the middle of the week. You know, we talked about that
Tuesday, of course. Always fun. Yeah. Always fun to get hurt early in the week.
Massey, you know, he was hitting .433 in seven games at AAA. Hit 15 homers and stole six bases last year. For the Royals and the majors, is 26 years old. I liked a little bit of what he was doing in the spring. I'm not running out to get him, but it was a 15-team league. I needed a second baseman. I think Massey fits in a lot of those places. He should play pretty much every day. Couple quick pitcher quick hitters. We'll start with one that I just had to mention because I was drafting him everywhere in the spring, and it's D.O. Hall was sent to the IL with a knee injury, fielding a bunt. Most of you had cut bait on D.O. Hall already. I don't blame you. I do think there's still something here. I don't know if we'll see it this year, whether it comes together for him. It's his first year as a starter. You know, maybe we see it in the summer. Maybe we see it next year. Just, you know, keep an eye on him come June, July, August is all I'll say. The bigger name, Christian Javier, was sent to the IL with a neck injury. So it's the second neck injury IL we've been talking about. We had Yu Darvish with a neck injury. The last time he was scratched, Javier was scratched on Sunday. We have no word right now on how long it will last. It is just referred to as neck discomfort at the moment. We don't have any sort of like sprain or strain or anything associated with that. Javier has looked great this year, really leaning into the changeup usage. I think we're just holding him on the IL and hope it's a two-week stint. Yes?
Yes, although every time I look at the playoff odds, they view the Astros as like the favorite or co-favorite in the AL West. I do not see it, man. I don't get it. I think the Rangers are definitely better. I think Seattle's probably better. Houston's not 7-16. They're better than that. They've outscored. I think they've underperformed their Pythagorean. They should be a winning team right now. But there's gaps in this lineup, and there's a lot of problems with the starting pitching staff. I think the Astros right now, I think they're less likely to make the playoffs than make it.
I don't know. I mean, I think they could still sneak in, but yes,
here's the thing, I guess
some help, and the pitching needs some help. They are theoretically going to get Luis Garcia, Framber Valdez, Lance McCullers back, which could help, but again, we don't know if that's the case.
Here's the recalibration for me, is that I'm just, because they were good for so long, and deep in the playoffs every year, they went to a bunch of World Series, they won championships. Obviously, there's a huge cheating scandal, but there's so much talent there. They were going to be great no matter what. I think the impact of the whole trash can thing was overblown. It was a bad look and everything, and then obviously you had to deal with it. I'm not sure baseball did it the right way, but whatever. They've been so good for so long. And I'm just trying to retrain my brain to not be oh my God, my pitcher's going up against the Astros. I got to bench him. A team I care about or a team I'm interested in otherwise is playing Houston this week. They're going to get swamped. I don't feel that way anymore. I'm not saying they're a lousy team, But right now, if anybody wanted to bet me about the Rangers or the Astros, who's going further, I would bet the Rangers and not even think about it.
Yeah, I would agree with that on that component. I think the Astros have guys in their lineup like Bregman is not hitting right now. McCormick is not hitting. Abreu is not hitting. Mauricio Dubon is playing pretty regularly and hitting. I think that of those guys, I think Abreu's done. We've talked about that. I think McCormick will get better. I think Dubon is probably better suited as a bench hitter. I think Bregman gets going. So realistically, I think the Astros have two holes in their lineup. It's Abreu and it's center field. Now they have some guys like Joey Loprofito who like maybe he makes his call up or his, you know, maybe he comes back. So I think there are some paths and we'll see what happens, but no, this is not the dominant, doesn't appear to be the dominant Astros team we've seen.
And I get it's hard to look past Alvarez and Tucker because they're so good and they're MVP quality good in the right season. But, and you mentioned Abreu, man, he has sunk down to 24% rostered in Yahoo. And in a bunch of my leagues, nobody's even touching. You know, we have two pickup periods during the week. Nobody's even touching him, even for the zero bids. Nobody wants him.
Yeah, I wouldn't. But yeah, so Christian Javier on the IL, wait, let's hear more about the neck injury. But I think this is just like, we'll see what happens here. With Javier out of the rotation, we don't yet know who's going to get the call up. It's Verlander, Ronald Blanco, Hunter Brown, JP France right now. I think that, you know, you might be looking at like Blair Henley, who got a spot start before, maybe gets a start. It's not going to be anybody you're running to pick up, basically. Merrill Kelly was scratched from his start. He went for an MRI. We have no news yet on the results of that MRI. It's a little more concerning than the Christian Javier situation because he had shoulder discomfort. Shoulder discomfort, you know, I talked about my buddy who works in an organization who mentioned that they are far more comfortable with elbow injuries than shoulder injuries and back injuries. So shoulder is a concern right now. I would expect Kelly to be down for a few weeks, not a minor turn in the rotation. So I think you hold him as long as you can, but Merrill Kelly is not somebody, even though I like him, to me, he's not somebody where if I'm in a crunch in the IL, in IL spots, I feel like I have to hold him. If you're in like 15 team leagues, deep leagues, obviously, but in a normal 12 team league, I think that you are okay moving on if we hear that he's going to be out for like multiple months. If he's out for just a couple turns in the rotation, hold on. And then I don't really see anybody replacing him right now. Clade Ciccone got the start. Hopefully Ryan Nelson is back off the IL soon. He just had an elbow bruise because he got hit with a comebacker. And then the other name I would tell people to watch is Christian Mena, who they got from the White Sox in February. He's a 21-year-old. He's in AAA. He has a 3.32 ERA across four AAA starts, 21 strikeouts in 19 innings. Could be an interesting name if they promote him. Otherwise, like Tommy Henry, Clade Ciccone, I'm not really invested in.
It's funny how a lot of things went right for them in the playoffs last year. They got to 83 wins, but they got to the World Series. And now this year, guys getting hurt, guys underperforming. And it's a really hard division. There's nowhere to hide in that division. Obviously, Colorado's horrible, but the other four teams are all trying, and the Dodgers trying harder than anybody. I feel like it almost feels like some good luck tax is coming due for the Cardinals, for the Diamondbacks this year.
Yeah, unfortunately so. Last two moves are two demotions, and I just want to know if you're giving up on both these guys. Victor Scott got demoted over the weekend. We talked about him a lot. And his speed when he was called up. And then just like 2 minutes ago, Louis Varland got demoted by the Twins. We kind of expected it. He had been pitching pretty terribly through four starts. Are you out on both of these guys? Or if they get opportunities again in June, July, August, would you consider going back in?
You have to be out right now. It's something you'll reevaluate when they come up. How well do they perform in the minors? What the situation is with the team, how lengthy the trial may be. When you said you had breaking news of a fresh demotion. I was afraid it was going to be Jackson Holliday, although we'll talk about him a little bit later, but maybe he should be demoted the way he's playing. He just looks overmatched at the moment. But yeah, you have to – Varland and Victor Scott are easy cuts.
Yeah, I am interested in Victor Scott if he comes back up again later. I see a 23-year-old who skipped AAA, who did not hit the major league level. I think it's pretty clear, like, he was not ready. However, 23% strikeout rate, just a 10% swinging strike rate. He had a 87% zone contact rate. 88% zone contact rate. This is not a guy who was overmatched in terms of swing and miss. It's a guy who wasn't able to make contact with any authority off of major league pitching. We had seen him continue to get a little bit better at, like, driving the gaps as he got up in the minors and then went to the Arizona Fall League. He's still somebody who I believe can hit major league pitching in his future and has the speed to be a real difference maker. So he's going to go down to AAA for the first time. Again, he's never been at AAA. He's going to get a couple months down there. He's somebody who I think we could see up again in, like, July and August, and is somebody that I think really could help people who need steals in the second half of the year, because I was at least intrigued by the fact that he wasn't getting blown away. He's not ready, but I don't know that he won't be ready, like, just pure won't be ready.
Totally reasonable. And even though it's early, the Cardinals are in last place in that division. They were finished last place last year. I would not be surprised if they did a partial teardown in the middle of the season. And then it becomes, okay, let's see what our young players can do. Let's try to develop them. And maybe they just say at some point, they just say in the second half, okay, Victor Scott's playing the rest of the year. I don't care if he hits 178. Yep. He's playing. We're going to give him a chance to, as you said, the AAA experience will be good for him. He did skip that level initially. So I want you to cut him, but I want you to be, I want you to keep that phone ready. I want you to beat everybody to the punch. And thankfully it probably won't cost you a lot when he does come back up, and right, he will come back up. I want you to be open-minded when that happens.
And I don't care how much you spent on him, cut him. Right. I spent triple digits in an NFBC, online championship to get him. I moved on.
It doesn't matter. It's a sunk cost.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. You're not holding on him at this point. We're going to get to some guys you should be holding on to or picking up. But before we do that, the NFL draft kicks off on Thursday, and we have you covered with our mock drafts, positional rankings, player interviews, news updates all around the league. Go to NBCSports.com/NFL draft today for insight leading into round one, and check back throughout the draft for analysis on every pick. If you go to NBCSports.com/NFL draft, or you go to our YouTube page, you'll see Connor Rogers and I broke down every single position, player previews for every single position. Connor does tremendous work scouting all these positions.
So good.
So you can look at guys that you need to know for the first round. And then we had a video just on, like, day three guys that you need to know, covering every position for day three guys. So that's something to check out. Connor, Roto, Pat, and I will be on the YouTube channel on Saturday night going over some key day three picks. All the guys from Fantasy Football Happy Hour will be going over the stuff on Saturday of just, like, fantasy impacts for these picks. So we've got you covered both from a real just NFL draft, NFL team perspective, and also fantasy perspective. So make sure you check that out over on the NBC Sports YouTube page and on NBCSports.com/NFL draft. I'm sure you guys have stuff.
What a dream team, man. What a dream team. You have so much NFL talent over there. And
it's great.
It feels like the run up to this draft has been like 8 months, but it's finally here. Yeah. And we know it's a critical NFL draft with all the quarterbacks are going to go early, all the receivers are going to go early. And then even though the running backs won't go as early, there are a lot of teams that are screaming for a running back. Dallas Cowboys are one of those teams. So you're going to have a lot to talk about. And I'm certainly going to check out all that content.
Yeah, it should be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Yeah. you already know you're going to eat some of those McDonald's golden fries on the drive home. So, you may as well add an extra order just for that.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I'm also looking forward to talking about some of the most added hitters and pitchers across Yahoo leagues. Also, and just some guys that we wanted to highlight who had really good weekends. You alluded to somebody who I tweeted about as well, which is the National second baseman, Luis Garcia Jr., who was, I think he was like the eighth most added hitter in Yahoo formats. So this isn't like one of the top guys, but I wanted to bring him up because you kind of already mentioned him before. This is the 23-year-old. He made his MLB debut at 20 years old. So this is a guy that I think we wrote off really early. He is currently hitting .317 in 19 games with one home run, 10 RBIs, five steals. He stole nine bases in all of last year. He already has five steals on the year. He has not been caught stealing at all. He has just a 16% strikeout rate. He is a free swinger. So that is something to keep in mind. This is a guy with a 38% chase rate, but he has a 91% zone contact rate. He only 10% swinging strike rate. He makes a lot of contact. He has good speed. I don't think he's going to hit for a ton of power, but I could easily see him ending the year with 15 steals and a solid batting average hitting in the middle of that lineup. And so I've added him in a lot of places. I know you're interested as well. I don't know that he's 12 team relevant unless like you're really hampered by like an Ozzie Albies situation or you really need speed, but I really like grabbing Luis Garcia.
Me too. You know, sometimes losing teams, it seems like they have this YOLO approach on this on the stolen bases. Like, just, okay, let's just run like crazy. Let's make that what we are.
We're seeing the Angels do it right now, too.
Right, yeah, Angels do it. I mean, Lane Thomas right now can't hit a thing. His OPS plus is 43, but he's stolen 10 bases. Every time he gets on base, he's been caught another time. I think eventually, I know Abrams only has four, but he's too good not to steal 40 or 50. Garcia's running his pop. Even Jacob Young, who isn't really a regular, whenever he's playing, he's already got up to six stolen bases. Unfortunately, he doesn't play enough or hit enough to really become fantasy violent, fantasy relevant.
Or, he's violent for your fantasy team.
Yeah, he can be violent on the bases. He's just not violent enough when he hits. But yeah. I just think about like, I remember when Jonathan Villar had a couple of seasons of relevance and people are like, oh, yeah, he's not really that good and he swings at anything. And I was like, I don't care. I just want the numbers. I just want – this is a guy who's going to go 20-40, and I'm in for it. And I know a lot of people don't think Lane Thomas is that great of a player, and the way he's hitting so far, they're looking validated so far. But he's running every time he gets on base. Garcia, right. Good lineup real estate. They're going to get Ruiz back. So I think this is a team – Jesse Winker was a popular pickup this week. I don't think this – team is good 1-9, but like 1-6, I'm kind of interested. They even have some pitchers we're interested in now, and it's not just Mackenzie Gore. We'll get to somebody in a minute. So I feel like this is a frisky little team. I feel like there's more people looked at this team and said, oh yeah, if I don't get CJ Abrams, who cares? I don't want anybody else here. I'm not going to be the sucker with Lane Thomas. You know, I'll wait a year on Mackenzie Gore. We'll figure out who their closer is. And they even have two relievers who are throwing lights out right now. So the Washington Nationals, I know how it's going to end. Sorry, producer Adam. They're going to win like 72 games. But this is a team that has some – I think they're underserved, underrepresented in the fantasy market, and Garcia is a part of that.
And I'm glad that you brought up that you don't really care so much about like what his swing profile is. I think it's important also to understand the type of hitter we're talking about, right? So this is a guy who chases outside of the zone a lot, but he makes a lot of contact. He is not a power hitter. So I don't care as much because if somebody's chasing out of the zone, but making contact, they're probably not making unless you're Vladimir Guerrero Sr., who was hitting home runs off balls that bounced, right? You're not really making meaningful, authoritative contact if you're consistently chasing out of the zone. So if I see a power hitter who's consistently swinging outside of the zone but making a lot of contact, I don't love it because I think that's going to limit how much meaningful, powerful contact he makes. If I see a contact hitter who has good speed, who's swinging a lot outside of the zone, but making a lot of contact outside of the zone. I don't, it's not something I'm like running to scoop up hitters like that, but also that's a profile that could still hit singles. And if that's a profile that still hits singles, that's a profile that still gets me an okay batting average and good stolen bases. So I don't run from high chase rates when I'm also seeing high contact rates, both in the zone and outside of the zone, if I'm looking for a batting average or a speed first player. And that's what Luis Garcia is.
That's such a great point. Like, you'll see sometimes a player will have a really low line drive rate, but it's a player whose game is mostly speed. And it's like, okay, that's actually good for some. It's not a lot of players, but for some players, just getting the ball in play and it doesn't have to be hit hard is good for them because they run mm-hmm. so fast and they get a lot of infield hits out of it, or they get opposite field hits because you're not looking. Again, the power isn't the thing with those types of players. It's not a common player trope, but it does show up enough. And you have to be open-minded to where those outliers show up. And I think you make a great point that Garcia may be one of those guys.
Yeah. And just to highlight, you did mention Jesse Winker, 328 batting average so far, two home runs, 13 runs scored, 9 RBIs, 2 steals. He is somebody we saw hit for a solid batting average and okay power when he was in Cincinnati. That dried up in Seattle, and then he was playing mm-hmm. through injuries in Milwaukee. He's 30 years old now. You're not getting some like crazy breakthrough, but we have to remember that just like 3 years ago, Jesse Winker was a very competent hitter in terms of good understanding of the strike zone, made a lot of contact. He's still that same hitter, good understanding of the strike zone, making contact. I don't know that you're getting 24 homers like you did in 2021, but he, I think, could be a solid deep league outfielder hitting in the top half of this lineup.
I blew it because I loved him last year. And as you said, injuries explain most of the season away, but I just kind of thought, okay, maybe the Winker thing is gone and I'll just give up on it. And so I was late to add him where I could.
I chose Rosario. Him and Eddie Rosario mm-hmm. were basically signed at the same time, and I had more belief in Rosario. And so in some like draft and hold leagues,
me too,
I took Rosario, and it's been Winker. And, you know, again, he's probably not in their outfield over the summer, because if he keeps hitting like this, they'll unload him to somebody and they'll bring up, you know, their prospects. But he's going to be useful for the next few months. Another outfielder who we alluded to earlier on was Willier Abreu, the 24-year-old who made his debut with the Red Sox last year, who is now back up and in pretty much an everyday spot in their lineup. Alex Cora did say he will play every day against righties, so he may sit versus some lefties. He's hitting .280 on the season with 1 home run, 9 runs scored, 7 RBIs, and 4 steals. He started off a little rough in terms of batting average, but he's 8 for his last 23 over his last 5 games. You know, the 4 steals in just 18 games is good to see. He is somebody who also chases a lot outside of the zone, doesn't make as much contact as Luis Garcia, so I think that batting average is not going to be .280 for a while. You might be looking more at like a .240 or .250, but he hit 22 home runs and stole 8 bases in AAA for Boston last year in just 86 games. He has some power. He has a little bit of speed. I think that he's going to be relevant in a lot of formats. And we know that even fully healthy, he was playing every day versus right-handed pitching. So without Casas, it's not like he's going to lose playing time. He is still, you know, if they go left-hand, if they face a lot of lefties in a week, you may have to sit him. But otherwise, he's going to be in that lineup and hitting or like 5th or 6th, basically.
Yeah, he's got an interesting profile, right? I mean, the great walk rate right now, his expected batting average, even though he's hitting .280, his expected batting average is actually under .200, which is really difficult to do. And he doesn't have bad, like his exit velocity is fine, his barrel rate is fine, his hard hit rate is around league average. Bottom line is this, he has playing time, he has a broad set of skills, and I think he's got enough leash here where they're going to ride it out with Abreu. So I with the park thrown in, he's somebody I'm interested in. It's just his sliders are all over the place. I like to see, and maybe sometimes when you look at these pages, right, we're just looking for some clarity. We're looking for explanations, and sometimes there just aren't. Sometimes stats just contradict each other, or they conflict, or they just we haven't gotten enough. We always talk about what stabilizes early. A lot of stuff doesn't, and we have to wait, and it won't. Right now, we're just making a guess on what something means. We won't really know what it means until we get more data. Unfortunately, to play fantasy right, you have to react to partial data, and sometimes you're just really taking a guess on tiny samples. That's what fantasy baseball in April is all about. But I admit, when I look at this profile, I'm like, man, I feel like you could choose your own adventure with Abreu.
Right.
You could go in so many different directions.
And sometimes you overreact to tiny samples. And that was why about a week ago, Dalton Varsho found himself under 40% rostered in Yahoo leagues. A lot of people were fully out on him. He has 5 home runs over the last 7 games. He has a really solid weekend, but really the last week has been really good for him. He has upped his season line. He's hitting .242 with 5 home runs, 14 runs, 11 RBIs, 2 steals. This is the case of us overreacting early on. He's somebody who we know underwent a swing change in the offseason. It looked good in the spring. It's not always sunshine and rainbows and consistent production when you're going through a swing change. And so he struggled a little bit out of the gates. You know, the power is nice to see. We knew he always kind of had some power. 2 stolen bases, fine. Like, you know, maybe he gets to that 16 range he got to last year. I don't think this is like a decidedly new Dalton Varsho, but I think this is the Dalton Varsho we thought would hit .240 with 20 plus home runs and 15 plus stolen bases, and people were cutting him too early.
Yeah, another case of you need to recalibrate. He came up as a catcher. He's not catcher eligible anymore. And because he was so disappointing last year, I think a lot of people washed him out. You said, okay, I'm done with that. This guy isn't as good as I thought he was. Maybe Arizona's going to win that trade. They get Montero, who's a good-looking catcher. But, I mean, even in a bad season, he had 20 home runs and 16 stolen bases. And I was interested to see how the swing change would play. The slugging's been there. The other slash stats aren't there. I don't really know. Your Toronto, Eric, 2 or 3 years ago, I thought this was going to be like the lineup I was in love with for 10 years. And I don't know what happened to that group. It's, we talked a little bit about Vladimir Guerrero last week about he's obviously good, but is he going to be like tear up the world good or just another good player? I'm still not really sure about that. Mm-hmm. Bo Bichette's a little bit like that. We know he's a good player. Is he a great player? And the changes to the ballpark last year, I thought it would help offense. It turns out that the park played more as a pitcher's park. That's 1 year sample. There can be noise and data like that. Bottom line, I think my general takeaway on Varsho is what you seem to be implying is that I think there's an underappreciated player here. He's still just age 27 season. It's easy to say this. He just had a good week, but I think he's trending upward. I think his whatever you currently think of Varsho, I think you'll think higher of him in like 2 months.
Yeah, I will say I don't think you need to use this as a sell high, right? This isn't like, oh, this is a hot week. Get him off your roster. Sure, if somebody wants to overpay for a 5 homer week, go for it. Mm-hmm. But I think this is going to be a solid guy. I don't think you should expect him to hit more than .240 or .250, but I think the rest of the stuff is going to play. And so I wouldn't be actively looking to get out from underneath him. A little bit in the way that I might for the next guy, one of the biggest pickups for this week was Brian De La Cruz of the Marlins. Over the last 5 games, he's 5-for-19 with 3 home runs and 5 RBIs. He has 5 homers on the season, 10 runs scored, 14 RBIs, a .274 average. This is a guy with a 28% strikeout rate and a 3% walk rate. Mm-hmm. He barrels the ball a bunch. He swings out of the zone a decent amount. He has just a 74% zone contact, or sorry, a 60, sorry, 74% zone contact rate, a 67% contact rate overall that is well below average, with the strikeout rate also being a concern. Brian De La Cruz can hit for power, not a question. He is hitting second in the Marlins lineup every day. I don't think you're actively trying to get away from him. I tried to get him in a couple places, have no problem with people picking him up this week. He's swinging a hot bat right now. But I don't necessarily think that this is the beginning of a breakout. I don't love what we're seeing in terms of his swing decisions. And I think this is a little bit of an all or nothing power profile without really any speed.
Yeah, talk about the poor man's De La Cruz, right? I mean, a lot of swing and miss, but when he does make contact, it's explosive. I'm encouraged by the jump in slugging because last year, you know, he only slugged .411. It's like, well, man, for a guy who swings from his heels, I'd like to see more happen when you actually hit the ball. This year, the slugging has spiked. And whenever people have picked up De La Cruz because he was a pickup middle of last season and people wrote him out for the rest of the year, it's like, well, he plays every day. I know the lineup isn't great, but he's in the middle of it. So you can get volume here. He's going to project to have over 600 plate appearances again, assuming he stays healthy. They're not jerking him around. They're not platooning him. So I think he's quietly, and as you mentioned, he percolated higher up in the lineup this year. Although Miami, man, is that team kind of a depressing team right now. But anytime, it's always in a mixed league, Eric, we want the most volume. We want the most at-bats. We want the most plate appearances. And that's a little bit of a survivor bias, because if you had players who weren't good, they wouldn't bat first or second or third. They right. would bat eighth or ninth. They'd be in platoons. They'd get sent down, all that stuff. But playing time, at-bats, volume, that's a way to fantasy success in a mixed league. I think De La Cruz is probably a better fantasy player than real-life player right now. But because of his real estate, because the slugging has trended upward, he was the most added player over the weekend in a lot of formats, and I don't like him. I'm not two hands in on De La Cruz, but I think he's certainly worthy of a pickup. And I think he'll be one of those quiet, the season will end, and be like, oh yeah, De La Cruz, he was like outfielder 43 or 44. He was useful. You won nothing having him,
right.
but you were better off rostering him than somebody else.
It wouldn't surprise me if he's a guy who's on and off a lot of rosters, but basically on somebody's roster for the entire season.
And maybe you're picking wrong in week after week, right? You don't get him. Right. He drives exactly. 13 runs. You don't play him. You play him the next week. He gets three hits. Yeah. It's just part of the game.
The last most rostered or most added hitter this week was Ahmed Rosario. Mm-hmm. He's somebody who it seemed like the Rays were going to use only against lefties at the start of the year. A lot of the injuries, in particular in the outfield, opened up extra bats for him. He's playing a lot of right field and or second base. And he's been really good over the last little while, but over the last five games in particular, he's 9-for-20 with one home run, five RBIs, two steals. This is somebody we've seen have fantasy relevance in the past. I would just caution people that Josh Lowe is starting a rehab assignment. Josh Lowe is going to play right field every day against right-handed pitching. So that could take away some of Ahmed Rosario's at-bats versus right-handed pitching in a few weeks. Though, you know, Harold Ramirez is DHing right now, not playing great. Brandon Lau is on the IL. So there's extra second base opportunities for Ahmed Rosario. So I don't know how long this lasts, but I have no problem picking up Rosario because I still think the lineup is not extraordinary, but fine. And we've seen him be a serviceable fantasy player before. And I think as long as you're saying, hey, I don't know how this is going to last, but I'll ride it while it's going, I think Rosario is a solid bet with some multi-position eligibility.
You must have written the note on him because it's almost exactly everything you wrote. You know, you know what, Roto World? I don't see any reason why the people who write the notes shouldn't have their initials at the end of it. Now, granted, I've read enough of your notes now that I can tell when it's you. But one thing I really like is that a lot of times when the player had a good game, whatever, you write about it and you just kind of get in, get out. But you're always trying to give the global overview of the player. And you talked about what do we expect from Rosario before the season? It's kind of different now. We didn't see him as a full-timer. Right now he is a full-timer. And isn't he, haven't we seen this classic rate? This is like the Ben Zobrist model. Not that Rosario's as good as Zobrist was at peak, but multiple positions, broad set of skills. Players like that are always generally underrated. Bill James told us that. I don't know the staying power of Rosario, but I was making aggressive bids. I was competitively bidding for him this weekend, and I'm glad I got some shares.
Yeah, I was bidding. I have him in a few places. Again, like him and De La Cruz are the types of hitters. You need to make some of those ads, too, where you're like, I don't know how long this guy's going to stay, but he's working for me right now, and I'm happy to do
it. And that's the thing, right? I know it's so trendy to say, I play with my hair on fire. I play for upside. I'm hitting home runs. You gotta mix in a couple of singles and doubles. Sometimes It's great to throw 70-yard touchdown passes. Sometimes you get to throw a 9-yard pass and get to the new first down.
Yes,
that's what Ahmad Rosario is. He's a chain mover, right? He's gonna be that receiver who catches 72 passes for 745 yards and five touchdowns. And you know what? There's a place for those guys.
The home runs that people think they're getting are in some of these closer bids, which we've seen. You already talked about Kirby Yates, who's one of the most added players in Yahoo over the weekend. It does seem like he's going to get a lot of the saves. They're using David Robertson in a lot of high leverage situations, which has left the ninth inning to Kirby Yates. I don't know that it will exclusively be Kirby Yates, but it's easy to see why they both should be on your rosters. Maybe Robertson gets more sneaky bullpen wins than saves. We don't know how long this will last for Yates. He's been really hurt over the last few years, so Robertson could be the fallback there. But I think they both seem viable in fantasy leagues.
For sure. They're older guys, so you have to be careful with that. But bottom line, when you're betting on team infrastructure, winning team, defending world champs, I still think this year they're a 90-plus win team. I think they're the best team in that division. We like Bruce Bochy as a manager. That's what you want to do. I'm not saying you can never roster these really like closers or even non-closers on losing teams, but you're just going to get your mileage is going to go so much further when they're a winning team. And obviously that's what Texas is. So I'll certainly sign off on Yates, but I think even in the deeper leagues, Robertson is interesting too.
There might be a closer change for another winning team because Advert Alzolay has blown, I think it's already four saves this year. He's not looking good. Hector Neris has locked down the last save and then got that Sunday fab boost of some really, really crazy high bids. Neris had a really tough start to the season, but has looked better of late. He's somebody who, though, has consistently struggled to like hold down a closer's job. We've seen him look really good for stretches. We've seen him go on bad stretches and lose the gig. Are you assuming this is it for Alzolay? He's out of the closer's role. Are you assuming Neris is the closer? Do you think this is a situation in flux? How are you kind of approaching this?
Yeah, well, Kirk Council called it day-to-day on Sunday, and Mark Leiter's here. Alzolay, you know, they're not going to bury him. It's going to be a case where what Neris does in his first few chances is going to go a long way, because what teams – in every sport, when teams find a easy button to push, they'll keep pushing it. So if Neris can get off to a fast start as the temporary, you know, head of the committee right now, it'd just be easy to say, okay, well, this is working. We're going to stick with it. And maybe they like, maybe Alzolay gets going in the middle relief. I mean, it's not like he's going to get cut or get, you know, thrown out of the rotation here. It's just a matter of he just may pitch in different spots, and there's always going to be teams now more than ever understand leverage, understand, you know, sometimes the game's critical in the, it's in the balance in the sixth inning, seventh inning, eighth inning. We saw that with the Mets this week where they had Diaz pitched in the eighth inning that set up Garrett to get that save because they used their better reliever in the eighth inning because the Dodgers' main part of the lineup was up. That's smart managing, right? And we've seen, I mean, Eric, we grew up with teams that would manage to the win and manage to the save. You know, you have to keep your starter in for five and let him get that win. And you had to save your closer for the ninth inning, even if it was the 7, 8, 9 guys, and it just made no sense. Teams don't do that anymore. But Council, he's one of my favorite managers. I think he's proactive. I think he's smart. I think he's reasonable. But also, when he talks about it, when somebody in Chicago's a tough media town, he answers the question. It'd be very easy to give us some BS answer and make us kind of guess on stuff. But I thought he handled it pretty openly, and I respect that. That said, I'm seeing Alzolay dropped in some of my leagues, and I can understand that. And I'm probably not going to be picking up the crumbs on that. I'm probably just going to let him stay on the wire.
I think I could see letting him stay on the wire for a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised if he works himself back into a situation at the end of the year or, you know, over the summer. I think, as you mentioned, Leiter could work in there. I think it's a similarly muddied situation for Craig Council's old team, where Joel Piamps was the big pickup. But I just want to caution that, like, Trevor McGill came off the IL with a from the concussion. And he was tasked on Saturday night with, like, immediately trying to get a two-inning save. And he looked really good. And then he just kind of, like, he let two guys on base with two outs in the second inning, you know, tired, obviously, throwing 30 pitches in his first game back off the IL. And so he couldn't cement the two-inning save. And then he was unavailable on Sunday because he had just thrown 30 pitches. He was somebody who was pitching the highest leverage situations against the Mets in the first series when Abner Uribe was getting the saves. McGill was used twice to face Lindor and Alonso, and because it was in the seventh inning, people said, oh, McGill, he's not closing. I think McGill is really obviously trusted by Pat Murphy in Milwaukee. I think he's going to be used in high leverage situations. I think he's going to be in this mix. I don't think it's just Joel Piamps. I think they can both be rostered. But I saw a lot of people not bidding on McGill or even dropping McGill. And I would just say if McGill's on your wire, I'd be adding him as well.
Especially because you love when you can get in at the lowest acquisition cost. He's somebody you can get for a zero bid, somebody you can get for that first come, first serve period that a lot of teams have after the offers get processed. I love being able to shop in that secondary market. And what a fun team, by the way, Milwaukee, 14-6. I think they're the second best offense by efficiency right now. Only Atlanta is ahead of Milwaukee. And in a year where, look at everything they lost. They lost their manager. They lost their basic roster architect. They lost their number one starter. Even right now, Yelich is hurt, which is a kick in the gut because he was off to a great start. But Contreras has been great. The pitching has been, I still don't know how deep it really is, but Peralta's off to a good start. Ray's off to a good start. Some of these bullpen guys are interesting. Hopefully they get Williams back. I don't know how optimistic you are on Williams off the major back problems, and back fracture, right? If he'll be ready to go in the middle of the season. But
I have him in a couple of places where
I do too.
I figured that he was a stash. So I'm interested for sure.
Well, what you're looking for, if you stashed him, the last thing you wanted is them to get off to a 6-14 start where it's like, okay, right, let's not rush him back. The season's in the tank. You love that they're competitive because then it becomes, okay, let's get this going here. We can maybe get into the playoffs, and we know we saw it last year more than any year, right, recently, that you get into the playoffs, all you need is a seat at that table, a chip in a chair, and you got a chance. Arizona was not a great team last year. They made it to the World Series. And, you know, I don't think anybody really saw Texas coming either. They were a good team but not a great team. So Milwaukee, right, I'm in on these guys. I might like Piumps just a little bit more than you, and I'm down on Uribe, but they're going to mix and match, and there's no reason why McGill can't get in this mix too. I think by All-Star break, it's going to be a case where like one of these guys will have 11 saves, one of these guys will have 6 saves, and one of these guys will have 3 or 4 saves.
I fully agree on all of that. We're going to get to the 3 most added starting pitchers, and then Scott and I are going to tell you a couple guys that we are actually really concerned about. But before we do that, the next stop on the IndyCar series is Barber Motorsports Park in Alabama. The green flag waves at 1:30 p.m. Eastern time, only on NBC and Peacock. That's the IndyCar series at Barber Motorsports Park in Alabama on Sunday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern time on NBC. And Peacock.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
You might not think that a few simple words could make you crave McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, but if you listen closely to the sound of me saying McGriddles, McMuffin, you might be wrong. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So the 3 most added starting pitchers, I look for guys who are added not just because, like, hey, they have a start on Monday, so people added them on Sunday night. But they were Mitchell Parker of the Nationals, Albert Suarez of the Orioles, and Jose Soriano of the Angels. I'm curious, I'll give my thoughts on these guys, but I'm curious if any of these 3 pitchers jumped out to you as somebody you had to add.
Mitchell Parker, interesting to me, former prospect, the strikeouts and walks lineup. Now, he was the guy who I was getting aggressive bids on. I didn't win all of them, but he was kind of my target this week.
And I mean, listen, 2 really good starts against the Dodgers and the Astros. So it's hard to, you know, you definitely don't look away from that when they faces those opponents. He's somebody who has he has a 3-pitch arsenal, only 2 pitches grade out above average. The curveball grades out as his best pitch. It has been a really good pitch for him so far this year, missing a lot of bats. He throws it in the zone a lot. The fastball, to me, your belief in Mitchell Parker depends on your belief in, can he continue to get away with a 92-mile-an-hour fastball because it has good extension and he has really good induced vertical break on it, which allows it to play up maybe more than it should based on its velo. I know Lance Brozdowski referred to it as like a Shota Imanaga light sort of four-seam fastball. If you believe that the fastball can succeed without without good velocity, then he's got a decent breaking pitch to go along with it. If you believe that that fastball is going to eventually be hit, then that really kind of narrows his usage. But I think he's certainly worth looking at for now. Like I was looking to add him because he also gets a pretty good matchup in the next week out. And I'll, oh man, who is it? I'll have to look it up. But he gets the Marlins next. And so if you look that good against the Astros and the Dodgers, I can play you against the Marlins for sure. And then we'll see how much I buy the other stuff.
Yeah, so it looks like at Miami and then at Texas, that'll be a challenge. But also the past pedigree here too, right? The book on him was that he had really good stuff. He just, the control wasn't there. And that's one of those things. And you can't teach somebody really, usually you can't teach somebody that to miss bats if they can, or to have, you know, eye dropping velocity if they don't. You know, I know guys mm-hmm. got to go drive line, they can improve it, but the things that he was good at already or made him an interesting prospect are the stuff that you have to have right away out of the box. We can figure out the control.
Yeah. Albert Suarez is a guy who was interesting. The Orioles called him up. He looked great in his first game. He is a 30-year-old who's bounced around. He went to the KBO. 34-year-old, sorry. Went to the KBO. The fastball has never been as good as it looked in that first start. It grades out below average. It gets a decent amount of horizontal movement. So even though it doesn't, it's like 96. The cutter is a really good pitch and grades out really well and misses bats and all of that. I don't know, man. Like, he has no options left. So they called him up. So he's going to stick in the rotation or the bullpen until they decide to cut him or trade him. So he's going to get an opportunity. He gets the Angels, I believe, this week. I'm happy to add him and see how it goes. I don't think this is like another breakout.
No, I don't either. I think he actually might get Oakland this week, which would be really good. But, oh, I'm sorry. Is it a two-start? He gets the Angels on Monday, and then he maybe, if he's still in the rotation, he'll get Oakland on the weekend. It sounds like they're going to get some reinforcements in this rotation soon. They may get Means back, hopefully Kyle Bradish back, although whenever it's like rehab over surgery, you always wonder if that other cleat is going to drop. But you're right, a 34-year-old journeyman. I know he's out of options, which usually would protect a player, but I don't think the Orioles view him as a long-term solution. And if they have to cut him eventually when things, just the roster glut falls that way, I think Suarez is going to be, unfortunately, something they risk exposing to the rest of the league. Maybe he'll get picked up and maybe he won't. Maybe he'll just get slid back to the minors. But I could see Adam this week because the matchups are good.
Yes.
I don't think there's any staying power.
Yes. I think the matchups are really good. If he does get both those starts, it's an incredible two-start week, especially because with his team, he's probably going to get two wins from that. The last guy is the guy I might be most interested in, which is Jose Soriano from the Angels. He is a 25-year-old who has looked really good through two starts, but much like Mitchell Parker, doesn't have like a really strong swinging strike rate overall, just 11.5%. His strikeout rate of 25% is a little bit below average, but he's somebody, he leads with a really good knuckle curve, and he's somebody who I think his pitches all move a lot, and he's a former reliever. I don't think he's going to go really deep into games, maybe five innings. He doesn't find the zone a ton, but he has some control issues. But his pitches move so much that hitters have a really tough time squaring him up. If he was on a better team, he'd be a better fantasy asset because I think he might only go five innings, and you're going to not steal that many wins on the Angels. But he's somebody I think is interesting, like five innings, one to two runs at a time with five strikeouts, not a lot of hits. Like, I think that could be the type of guy he is.
For sure. You follow the strikeouts, follow the swings and misses. Again, he's enough control. It's going to be a lot of 4 and 5 inning starts for him. I feel like you have like almost no win equity, but at least the strikeouts present a plausible upside.
Yeah, it's just somebody to keep in mind in deeper formats. Real quick, because we are running out of time, we're just going to hit we each have a couple players that we have legitimate concern over, not necessarily guys to drop, but just guys we are concerned about. So who are the guys you're concerned about?
I hate saying this, but Jackson Holliday, he looks overmatched. He's 20 years old. It's to be expected, but the walk strikeout rate, I mean, he's having trouble. He's swinging out of the zone more than I thought. And he's batting ninth. They're so loaded there that even if he starts to get it going, he's not going to be hitting third. You know, the team, it's amazing how talented this team is. I think eventually they're going to say, well, we're putting too much pressure on the kid. Go down and you know, kick the crap out of AAA pitching again. I I don't think they're going to let him struggle this much longer because they don't want him to have his confidence get wrecked. But even I'm just thinking the upside may not be what we. It's hard when the best player and the best prospect in baseball gets called up. You want to think, and I'm usually not a prospect guy in the sense that I don't expect miracles right away. Baseball's hard. There's a list of so many tremendous baseball talents who didn't hit the ground running. It just it seems like there's just a curve. You know, it takes a while to kind of figure it out, but. I feel sorry for the kid. Maybe he's just pressing right now. There's plenty of guys who came up. I mean, Willie Mays came up. You know, remember when we did Willie Mays podcast on NBC? One home run in his first 25 at bats. And Warren Spahn said, I should have struck out this Mays guy. Then we'd never have to worry about him. Robin Ventura came up and couldn't buy a hit. Mike Trout had a really bad first half season with the Angels. There's a million guys. Jackson Holliday could still be a wonderful player, but I'm concerned about him. The other player I'll mention, and I think we may have talked about him last week, is Aaron Nola. Picked up a win on the weekend, I believe, but velocity's down. He's never been a big strikeout guy. Strikeouts are down. Walks are up. I hate their defense. We always hate their defense. And the ERA estimators say that 3.16 is a total mirage. I would love, if you had pitching depth, we always talk about this, don't scream out you want to trade somebody. I'd say I got good pitching depth and see if you can maybe get close to full value on Aaron Nola. I think I'd like to get out of the Aaron Nola business.
Yeah, all three of my guys are hitters. Will Benson is hitting 186 so far in the year. I know he's walking over 12% of the time, but he has a 38% strikeout rate, and TJ Friedl is about to start a rehab assignment. I think that then pushes, you know, Friedl into an everyday role, and Benson and Jake Fraley are now starting to share a little bit more playing time. Benson obviously could be DHing. We know that Nick Martini is doing a lot of DHing versus righties. So I still think there is playing time to be had for Benson given the injuries, but I don't think we're getting the breakout that people were thinking, that the plate discipline, the strikeout rate. It is concerning. Nick Castellanos is another one. I told people in my waiver wire article this weekend to hold Nick Castellanos, and I still believe you should hold Nick Castellanos because we know he has a track record of success and he hits in a good lineup in a good park. And so I'm not cutting him, you know, before the calendar flips to May, but he has the sixth highest swinging strike rate among all qualified hitters in baseball and is swinging out of the zone 42% of the time. So he's a power hitter chasing outside of the zone, swinging and missing a lot. That's something he started to do at the second half of last year, but he was still hitting for power. It's continuing, and now he's not hitting for power. I wasn't drafting him coming into the year. I have a little bit of concerns. And then the last one is Nolan Gorman, who I'm also holding on because he's a young hitter, and I do believe there's upside here, and he has three home runs, so he can make authoritative contact. My concerns are that he is 0 for 13 with 8 strikeouts over his last three games, but that is connected to him being having the fifth highest swinging strike rate among all qualified hitters so far this year. There is too much swing and miss in his game at the present moment. I don't think anything's going to happen until Tommy Edman comes back, and then that could put pressure on them to put Gorman in the minors. So you've got some weeks, and I think he has the talent to figure things out. But I'm a little concerned right now.
Yeah, one other player who fits that mold of he's slumping, he has a job now, but eventually they're going to have a glut is Jonathan India, off to just a horrible start with the Reds. It's been a little bit of bad luck here. His expected average is actually 274, but his expected slugging is 359. And that's, you rostered India thinking he'd hit maybe 20 home runs. Maybe he'd run a little bit more. There's a team where everybody runs like crazy, but he only has 2 stolen bases. Mm-hmm. I'm just afraid that if he doesn't mark his territory a little bit in the next, I don't know, 3 to 5 weeks, they're going to have too many options at some point when people come back and get healthy. Who knows? Maybe other guys will get hurt. That will never be a problem. And India's had injury problems as well. Yeah, so there are a couple of leagues, like 12-teamers, where I had India. There's a player I wanted to pick up. I looked really long and hard. I'm like, I can't cut Jonathan India, can I? Ultimately, I didn't do it. I kept him. I'm going to, you know, it's still April 22nd, but he's on the watch list right now. He's on probation right now. I might have benched him in a league or two. I'm not cutting him. I'm not giving up on you, Jonathan India, but just know, you know, I don't have 5 months for this. You're on like a 6-week contract for me.
I agree. I held on to him, Christian Encarnacion, Strand in a few places.
Yep.
And so I think you got to hold on to those guys.
Candelario isn't hitting either, and he's got the contract that kind of bails him out. We talked about, like, there's no good pickups for Casas. Candelario has been dropped in a lot of Yahoo leagues. If you want to just say, well, the contract is going to keep him in the lineup. It's still Cincinnati. Will. It's a great hitter park. Maybe he could be a temporary fill-in for you.
Potentially, yeah. Hopefully that was enough, guys, to pick up, to, you know, to hold on to worry about. Scott and I tried to cover all of that. We're going to be back on Wednesday with more news and notes, and also looking at some early exit velocity leaders. Batted ball event metrics are going to start to stabilize this week, so we're going to try to see if we can give you some guys who are hitting the ball harder in meaningful ways than they were last year. So you can check us out on Twitter. I am at Samsky NYC. Scott is at Scott_Pianowski. And we'll see you on Wednesday for another episode of the Roto-World Baseball Show.
You might not think that a few simple words can make you crave McDonald's breakfast sandwiches. But if you listen closely to the sound of me saying McGriddles, McMuffin, you might be wrong. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.